Subcommittee on Healthcare Access and the House Committee on Healthcare to order. We are not going to have a public hearing today a work session or a public hearing on House Bill 2517. We're getting competing discussions on where the amendments are and whether they're ready for prime time or not. I've asked the people who are working on 2517 to get me a consensus set of amendments, and my understanding of a consensus is that everybody's involved, not just a consensus of two different parties of the four or five that are involved in this. So if I may, let's push that consensus a little bit to include as many of the parties as we can. Do you have a sense of when we ought to reschedule it for, Sandy?
Mr. Chair, I don't. I know that the information that I did get on Friday were that they were just beginning to float around some conceptual amendments. I don't know if all the stakeholders have seen it, nor do I know if they've been submitted to Legislative Council for official drafting yet. But I can follow up with.
Well, there are a set of dash one amendments.
Correct.
That came with an announcement that they were agreed upon by at least three parties. I talked to one of the three parties a half an hour ago. He's working on a different set of amendments. So
okay. And I apologize. I didn't bring down any of the information on 2517 for the rest of the subcommittee members. So.
Should we reschedule that for next Monday?
We can
see if that works.
I could check with Mr. Barrows and
see. Is he our scheduler?
No.
I thought you were a scheduler.
I am the scheduler, but he has a better sense of the amendments.
Shall we schedule it for next Monday?
Next Monday it is.
Okay.
We'll reschedule it for next Monday.
Thank you.
That's April 2nd.
I just announced we're not going to hear 2517. That my sense of a consensus is more than just two people.
Motion to accept.
And there are at least five parties in this one. I'd like more of them involved. I've been informed by at least one of the three parties who the memo says agreed to the dash ones that he's working on a different set of amendments. I hope we can get this worked out.
The dash ones are fine with us. Sure.
Yeah, but they're not fine with other people.
Fine with everyone.
Yes. Okay. Let's see if we can get one that's fine with at least most everybody here. You can't always get everybody. I know that. Okay, let me open a work session on 27. I didn't open one or the other. On 2733. My understanding about 2733 is we've managed to create some amendments that don't make anybody happy. Is that right? I'd like to hear a few comments from DCBS, and I see one of the gnomes of Beaverton back there who might give us a word about what the Hospital Association thinks about where we're going at the moment, and we'll see if we can figure out where we go from here. Mr. Arian, you want to start us off?
Mr. Chair, that's a different title than they've ever heard for Bruce Bishop before, but that's a good one. The gnome of Beaverton. Mr. Chair, for the record, Joel Ario, the insurance administrator with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. When we were last here on this bill, we testified that the language on page 2 of the bill that talks about who's required to comply with the terms was narrower than the intent because it limited the covered entities to those that are required to file an annual financial statement with our department, and that would include only the insurers and the healthcare service contractors and not other types of healthcare facilities that I believe the intent was to include in the bill. the Dash 1 amendments, I think, do accomplish the purpose of expanding who the bill covers to include health care facilities rather broadly. So brings in the known from Beaverton's hospitals and the long-term care facilities and an ambulatory surgical center, freestanding breathing center, and also an outpatient renal dialysis facility. I'm just reading from the definition of health care facility. So in that sense, the Dash 1s are an improvement on the bill in expanding who's required to comply with the intent here, which is to protect health privacy. The department still has two concerns with the bill, one of them which we expressed last time, which is we don't believe that for the health insurers that the attaching these requirements to the annual financial statement and to the financial accreditation process is probably the best place to put this responsibility. So we offered a number of suggestions. The one that I think got the most discussion last time was that each health insurer does have to appoint a HIPAA privacy officer, and to have the responsibility be with the HIPAA privacy officer making some kind of report to us or to somebody else, could be somebody else as well, might be more sensible than to attach this to the financial accreditation program. So that's one concern that we still have that hasn't been addressed. And then the second concern now, new under this bill, is that the good news is that the new types of entities are brought into the bill. The bad news from our perspective is that they're made accountable to us, and then we don't have any enforcement mechanism or any regulatory authority over those kind of entities today. So you end up in this situation where they would have an obligation to report to us, but if they didn't report or reported improperly or in any other way there were any need for us to take any action, we don't have any regulatory authority, underlying regulatory authority to use here, and so you'd end up having to create in this bill some kind of enforcement structure. And I'll say what I often say in these kind of hearings: every time the legislature looks at whether our department ought to have authority over somebody else besides the insurers in the healthcare marketplace, like especially the providers, the decision of the legislature has been we won't go there.
DCBS, by DCBS you mean DCBS has no authority outside of the insurance business?
Mr. Chair, no, that is an overstatement. If I said it that way, I mean to say within the healthcare marketplace, we don't have authority over the other players within healthcare. So the providers, the hospitals, and those sorts of entities, we have authority in different places within the department over other types of business activity, but not over, for instance, these facilities. I believe the Department of Human Services has most of the responsibility in most situations for hospitals, long-term care facilities, and so forth.
If I came to you with a bill and it said banks here instead of health authorities, talking about the information, the private information of a bank, would you say that it went to DHS because they deal with private information, right? I'm a little confused by your...
Mr. Chair, very good question, and let me back up and just sort that out. What I'm talking about with healthcare is that within the healthcare marketplace, DCBS and the insurance division have authority over the insurers and not authority over other entities within the healthcare market for the purpose of providing healthcare. We do within DCBS have, as you suggest, authority over the banks for other financial purposes within DFCS, but not over the banks in relation to what they do on healthcare. We have authority within workers' comp over every employer within the state, but not over their authority in relation to healthcare. And so this would be a new type of authority over healthcare.
Let me ask it differently then. Okay. Let's say instead of the definition of a healthcare facility, it says a corporation shall file. Would you say DCBS, and then everything else is the same? Would you say DCBS doesn't have the authority to regulate private information inside corporations?
Mr. Chair, again, it would depend on what kind of information, in what context. We have a number of different types of regulatory authority. I don't believe today we have a type of regulatory authority that would allow us to implement this particular statute with reference to hospitals. So it really does become not a general statement about what we do and don't regulate, but specifically with each kind of entity and the type of regulation, do we have a structure? We do have a structure for banks and financial information, but we don't have a structure, for instance, for banks and health information. And so I think this structure doesn't mean it can't be done. Increasingly, as the department does more business regulation, we may end up with more expanded responsibilities for other types of business regulation. But right now, this is one, when I look at with my division or the other administrators and the director looks at our authority, would be difficult to figure out where to put this. And that's combined with the fact that today DHS does exercise regulatory authority over these entities in some respects. So I don't want to say it can't be done, but it would take some work to figure out how the regulatory authority should work.
And if I get an amendment that substitutes a corporation for a healthcare facility and personal information for health information, where would you recommend that statute go?
Mr. Chair, I believe there is a bill similar to what you're talking about, identity theft, and that is within the department, and that relates primarily to financial information, as I understand it.
Hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
You handled it.
You know this Representative Maurer there, so you're excluded from this bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you. If I can make a comment about this, and how is this going to help reduce health care costs? And I'm not asking.
I mean, I suppose I could testify.
In my excuse,
your excuse, which probably wouldn't be a bad idea. I think it will not necessarily reduce health care costs. What it will do is increase the protection of sensitive health information being held in a lot of corporations around the state.
May I ask you
We're in a work session, yeah.
Okay.
We can talk.
we can talk.
is that right?
That's right.
Currently, the federal law requires that healthcare organizations, healthcare providers, protect health information, PHI, protected health information. And so the problem has been, at least as I perceive it, that there have been a number of lapses in security, primarily because of the technology, computer disks, and ended up in someone's car, someone steals a computer
off
a desk, and that really is that's what we're trying to address here. It's not the day-to-day interaction between providers and other providers. And what we're trying to do is raise the level of responsibility, even though you can never delegate responsibility as CEO, but we're trying to make that so that they are aware that they have this direct responsibility. Is that really the intent?
Yes, that's precisely it. I've been dealing in a different context as a member of a board of a nonprofit foundation about how Sarbanes-Oxley relates to different kinds of organizations. And Sarbanes-Oxley has had the interesting effect of making CEOs and CFOs sign the financial reports as if they were taking responsibility for them. It's very clear, in the early corporate scandals, Ken Lay and lots of others were quick to say, oh, geez, somebody down there must have really been screwing up somewhere. We'll find them and punish them. We'll find some corporal somewhere that we're going to punish for this. And what's happened since is that people have taken the financial reports and other corporate reports much more seriously since their name's on the line. This was an attempt to do something very similar. I was a little dismayed, as I've said before, by the opening remarks of some CEOs. When problems came about, when data was stolen that had no business being where it was,
And if anybody had looked at the security systems, they would have said, no, it's not a logical security system to give somebody a bunch of confidential data and tell them to take it home in their car. So in case there's a fire here, we'll have a disaster recovery. It'll be in their car, and we'll trade who gets it. Nobody, no sane CEO would have approved anything like that if that was in. So what I thought we could do is two things. One is to make healthcare corporations that have big amounts of data, hospitals, I'm really interested in hospitals and health insurance companies, come in and say, here's our plan to secure our data. And in addition, to have the CEO or the chief information officer, somebody responsible, say, and I reviewed this, and I'm willing to accept responsibility for these procedures. Does that mean they won't fail? No. Any human system can fail. But all that my attempt here is to get the level of awareness and responsibility relatively high up, and I think it would be very useful for these large corporations to file a report every year, an annual report that says, here's what we're doing about our confidential data. And I mean, it could start with, we have a HIPAA compliance officer, and here's all our HIPAA policies attached, and here's our data security, here's the data recovery systems, and they're attached, and you know, the report will be that big. And I reviewed them, and they're as good as I think we can get them. I mean, it seems to me very simple. And I don't think it's all that complicated. I don't think it's all that expensive. I think it's what ought to happen anyway.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Who will read that report when you're gone?
I don't think it's necessary that anybody ever read that report.
Excuse me, why?
I think it's the doing it that's important. We've got some principles in healthcare. An example of this. When we first started echocardiograms, and they were being used wildly, and we wanted to reduce the use of echocardiograms, somebody designed a system where any cardiologist that wanted to use an echocardiogram had to call this number and say into the recorder why they wanted to use the echocardiogram, and then they could use it. That's literally all they had to do. Call the recorder, record the message of why they had to do it. It cut the use of echocardiograms by half. It was the reporting that made the difference, not anybody reading it and saying, I mean, because no respectable CEO is gonna issue a report that's really goofy. People will look to see if the report got there. That's what they'll do, and make sure there's a report.
That's one of the problems with government, is that we require reports to be created on the backs of business that get filed, and we hire employees to file them, and nobody cares whether they're there or not. Now, if it's to cut back on the use
people
of
care whether they're there or not.
They only that the piece of paper got there, not what it says on it. And so that's why I brought it up, because if it's merely to make them fill out a report so that they will look at it and sign it, but nobody's going to pay any attention to it, then all we're doing is burgeoning government and burdening individuals.
Well, it would burden government even more if they did something about it, wouldn't it?
Got a point.
Well, Representative Greenlick, I have a propensity to take Representative Richardson's statement to heart, because as a school principal, every year we spent an inordinate amount of time, staff, administrators, parents, filling out a school improvement plan for the federal government. I thought at least it went to the state and somebody read it. It did not go any farther than one person's office and sat there. And as soon as I found that out, it's like, you know, the heck with filling out. I mean, we did a very...
What did you do then? Did you stop trying to figure out how to improve the school?
We went to a different format that was required by the state instead of the federal government. But to put the inordinate amount of time that we did into a document that was never read, never even critiqued to say, well, I think this is a good strategy or this is a terrible strategy. It was an outrageous use of my time. And the taxpayers cost some money for paying my salary to do it.
And it didn't improve the school.
It did not improve the school.
That's important.
If I can translate a concept that I grew up in the military, or as a career, as an officer, as a company commander, battalion commander, You cannot delegate responsibility, but you can delegate authority. And so that means that as a, the responsible person, you can't like the CEOs of Enron, et cetera, they abdicated responsibility. They said, that's not my responsibility, when in fact they should never have been able to do that. And so if we need to make a change in statute that says you cannot delegate this responsibility, it lies with the CEO or CFO, then I think that would be wholly appropriate. But in order to do work, just to do work, is I think, this
yes, a good point as far as the process versus the result that's sought.
Yeah.
And the result that's sought is that CEO is going to be responsible for it and will be liable for failure to perform, failure to do it in a responsible way. That, I think, would be really an appropriate thing. But to try and make it happen by defining a process of making sure you sign something that gets sent in and filed somewhere and nobody's going to look at it, I think that may not be the best way to get to the end, and just for the sake
of... We could put something in who has to look at it. But
how about just that somebody loses their... there's some financial consequence
off
or some problem off with their head. At least,
Mr. Bishop, would you like to join this conversation?
The tale of two cities, down with their bloody heads or off with their bloody
off
heads?
Off with their bloody heads.
That's the tale of two cities.
Your humble servant, Uriah Heep. No, that's Copperfield. Right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the answer is no.
In the words of
Yes, sir.
The answer is no. I would not like to join this conversation, but I'll...
Are you willing to?
I'll try to. I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I believe that the amendments before you confuse the issue rather than clarify about both what the reporting and the enforcement requirements would be for healthcare facilities subject to these requirements. The reporting requirement would be that reports go to the Department of Consumer Business Services, and the enforcement of that requirement, I believe, under the amendments, would rest with the Department of Human Services. And I'm sure those two departments of state government could figure out a way to coordinate those responsibilities, but it's not very clear how they would do that as laid out in the bill.
Yeah, DOJ coordinate the two.
Then you could well.
Blue Ribbon Commission.
A special personal health information body. The further objection of the Hospital Association to the Dash 1 amendments is that the sanctions that are proposed in the amendments that appear on page 4 at the end are that no license shall be issued or renewed for any healthcare facility unless the applicant has complied with the reporting requirements. There might well be circumstances in which serious disregard of legal reporting requirements could warrant that level of sanction, but as drafted, removing the license of a hospital or other healthcare facility for a non-report would have dire healthcare consequences for that community that's served by that facility, and probably would not be an appropriate sanction for the offense that was involved. So I think we've got overlapping departmental responsibilities here and an excessive sanction, at least, that could well exceed the offense that's involved. For those reasons, we would oppose the Dash 1 amendments.
We need to make the crime fit the punishment.
At least, yes. with regard to whatever...
Hubert and Sullivan, right?
Yes.
With regard to whatever it was you called me, I would only like to...
From Beaverton.
I thought I heard
that,
yes. For
those that might have forgotten.
That I should point out that I'm an involuntary annexee to the city of Beaverton. I have never agreed to be a part of the city of Beaverton. And had intentionally
you're not my constituent.
Had intended to be an islander between urban centers of Beaverton and Portland, was unable to continue in that status. So,
curious. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think those comments were very useful. It's important to me that Senator Pruzanski is working on a bill in the Senate. It's an omnibus bill on the protection of... is that barrels?
Yes.
an omnibus bill on the protection of private data that includes health data and a variety of other private data, and it was even asserted by one ancient lobbyist that there's some consensus on that bill. I'll check in with Senator Pruzanski, see how that's going, and if it's going well and it's really moving, there's probably no point in carrying this any further, but we'll see how it is, and I'll close this work session.
Chair Greenlick, your point is well taken, though, and I appreciate the work you have done on this. I have a whole another level of respect with you since when I read this last page, and you know, if we need to work together on some school issues.
I love that. That's why I was on the education committee. So it would be very helpful. I will close this public hearing. We'll let this thing for the work session on HB 2733. We'll let 2733 stew in its own juices while. I see what's going on the other side of the building, and I really appreciate these comments. It's been, I think, very useful, in addition to a little fun. We will again remind you we can meet again at 5 o'clock if we're so moved to talk about Senate Bill X that we may hear about today, or we may not.
That's your agenda for...
The agenda for the informational meeting. Okay, 5 o'clock in room 50 for those of you that want to be there. And I will adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.